now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. God Journey. Well, Merry Christmas, Mr. Brad.
Merry Christmas to you, too. Your bah humbug's gone.
We're only days away. Well, it's, hey, preparation's
your
done.
Your bah humbug's gone because your lights are on, your decorations are going, it's raining cats and dogs outside, or maybe just cats.
And it's daylight and they're on, so that's amazing, isn't it?
That's beautiful.
I got a tree in my office behind you there. Look
you
at
gotta
that.
Love that.
I got a little tree.
Where's my gift?
I didn't plug it in yet. It's downstairs. I got it for you. Haven't gotten it to you yet. You guys ready over at the Cummings household?
We are. We're having a blast. The kids have a little calendar thing every morning. They kind of open up a new window, and there's a chocolate in there, and it's a countdown. So they always love that stuff. So
I heard your Christmas tree this year is like a bunch of pallets stacked together. You break lights on them. Would that be true?
Most of the gifts under the Christmas tree and all around the Christmas tree and throughout our house are cases of the shack that are just flying out of here. It's nutty.
Oh, so the cases are the presents this year. Welcome.
God bless.
Dear Jonathan.
Everyone, here's one and all.
Here's another box of books.
I haven't had a chance to go shopping at all, so we just joking at the dinner table last night. And Kelly's mom was asking, so, you know, what are you doing for your... Everyone gets a Shaq book. I'll sign them.
On that, they ain't getting the hardback. Actually, just promo a little bit. The next podcast or two, we're going to have the author of The Shaq with us again. He's coming down tomorrow. We're going to take a couple of podcasts. So we got that to look forward to. If you want to hear from Brother Paul again, we'll have him join us for the next couple of podcasts. That'll be fun.
That'll be a blast.
Hey, since this has been a tough year with cats. Hate picking on cats on the year of
Please don't.
Demise.
And the kittens.
And the kittens.
You go through three cats this year. That's not good.
I heard you guys were the new feline recycling center. Is that true?
That's
not right. See, there's a line there,
Kelly,
somewhere.
You can hit
it.
Wayne anytime you want. Children, kick him in the shins.
See, I crossed that line
you
somehow.
You do. You're a feline line crosser.
But because we've poked on the dog cat thing over the years, I've gotten this email sent to me a few times, but we've not used it yet. I think it's hilarious. This is excerpts from a dog's diary.
Excerpts from a dog's diary.
And then we'll get excerpts from a cat's diary.
Oh, perfect.
And I won't
this
do it
be
all.
Great.
We'll just do bits of it. But here's the dog's diary. 8 a.m. Dog food. It's my favorite thing. 9:30 a.m. Car ride. It's my favorite thing. 9:40 a.m. A walk in the park. It's my favorite thing. 12 noon. Lunch. My favorite thing. 1 o'clock. Played in the yard. It's my favorite thing. 3 o'clock. Wagged my tail. It's my favorite thing. I will skip a few of those. Down to 7 o'clock. Got to play ball. My favorite thing. 8 o'clock. Wow. Watch TV with the people. It's my favorite thing.
That sounds like our dog.
11 p.m. Sleeping on the bed. It's my favorite thing. Well, some of you heard from Sheba last week on the podcast, and that's kind of how it goes with Sheba. Just kind of like that. Now, here's a cat's diary. The excerpt from a cat diary. It's day 683 of my captivity. My captors continue to taunt me with bizarre little dangling objects. They dine lavishly on fresh meat, while the other inmates and I are fed hash of some sort of dried nuggets. Although I have made my contempt for the rations perfectly clear, I nevertheless must eat something in order to keep up my strength. The only thing that keeps me going is my dream of escape. In an attempt to disgust them, I once again vomit on the floor. Today I decapitated a mouse and dropped its headless body at their feet. I had hoped it would strike fear into their hearts, since it clearly demonstrates that I am what I'm capable of. However, they merely made condescending comments about what a good little hunter I am. The audacity. There's some sort of assembly of their accomplices tonight. I was placed in solitary confinement for the duration of the event. However, I could hear the noises and smell the food. I overheard that my confinement was due to the power of allergies. I must learn what this means and how to use it to my advantage. Today I was almost successful in my attempt to assassinate one of my tormentors by weaving around his feet as he was walking.
Oh, they do that. I understand completely.
But he's
now.
Learning. Listen to this. I must try this again tomorrow, but at the top of the stairs. So I'm convinced that the other prisoners here are flunkies and snitches. The dog receives special privileges. He is regularly released, and it seems to be more. And he seems to be more than willing to return. He is obviously retarded. The bird has got to be an informant. I observe him communicating with the guards regularly. I am certain that he reports my every move. My captors have arranged protective custody for him in an elevated cell, so he is safe. For now.
Isn't that hilarious?
Wow.
Oh.
Your outlook on life, it declares everything.
Two ways to look at life, isn't it?
It is. That's profound.
That is profound. I've said that to people. We had a friend of ours get married, and the guy marrying them, the guy officiating at the ceremony, had read 1 Corinthians 13, all the love bits. Love is kind, love is patient, love forbears, love, love, love. And he gave him a homework assignment after he read that. He said, "What I want you to do every week for the rest of your married life, I want you."
It doesn't sound like fun already.
No, it's not fun. And it would shorten their married life, actually. Because what he actually said to them is, "I want you to sit down, read 1 Corinthians 13 to each other, and then ask your partner, how have I failed to live up to this
that was his inspiring little preamble?
That was homework. Then I understood why he said the rest of your married life, because it was going to be about a year and a half. You just can't get past that. And I had that same talk with someone this week. You know, you can, in a relationship, if you want to focus on everything negative, every way this person's not loving me the way I want to be loved, you're going to get the end of it burned up.
Yeah.
Hurt, angry at them, and feeling justified about it.
Right.
But if you begin the week, I mean, gosh, Sarah and I try to explore this with our marriage. I, at the end of a week, look back and go, what are all the ways Sarah expressed her love to me? And what is it I enjoy about her? That focus.
Far better observation to make.
It's my favorite thing. It is. Sarah is my favorite thing. And then my two little granddaughters coming up close to that. And somewhere down the trail is my kids. But yeah.
Wow.
My favorite thing.
That's interesting. Cool. I had a phone call from a friend in middle of last week. And the guy was just kind of struggling. And he was sort of wanting to sort of check in and go, you know. He's at a new transition in his own life, trying to figure out. I think what he's wanting is some kind of guarantee from God. You know what I mean? He's like, well, how do I hear God in this moment? And he's just going, like, dude, there's no guarantees. And he says, well, how do you handle this? Because he's recognized I've been through many a transition.
You think?
The funny way to summarize it.
My favorite thing.
But the reality is, I said, well, here, you know, the best thing to help you, punch your expectations. As opposed to lining up constantly your set of disappointments of what you're trying to figure out what you should do, why don't you just flow with it a little bit and respond to what's in front of you and try to look for where God is at in all of it, as opposed to trying to prescribe for God a script he should follow and then pray that he blesses it. I said, far better. And you could just tell his head was tilting and he's going like, gee, that sounds really great. And I said, I'm not just thinking it's a nice set of words. I said, really, if you can punt the whole defining the expectations, I said, you'll live far happier.
Yeah, because it's really not the mental gymnastic of, okay, I'm going to try and think, half glass, half full, half empty kind of garbage. It really is a different way about looking even at circumstances. A great letter a friend of mine wrote about cancer that I posted on the blog. We'll talk about it with him. I think he's going to come visit us in January. So we're going to talk about that letter with him a little bit. But I think the whole turnaround of, I'm in this, and how I do this, to what does God have in this for me? If our days were that way, if our life in Him were that way, instead of, okay, God, I'm praying for you to do this, and you haven't done that, and you haven't done this, what if it just starts with, God, how are you making yourself known in this? And really letting Him, or letting the relationship, I have found what this has done in my heart, because I used to be the other kind of, I guess that's why I harp on expectations a lot. I used to have a lot. And right. I used to live with God, especially, with other people, certainly. And I used to live disappointed and frustrated all the time. And you could always turn your attention. You could always, when you live with expectations, it's never your fault.
Right.
You always get to blame the other person who's not acting Christian enough, who's being selfish, who's, you know, God doesn't care about me. Whatever you want to go to, you can feel fully justified in that frustration. And what I love about the life, that transition God's made in my heart somewhere 8, 9, 10, 12 years ago, is that I find myself immensely more grateful every day. Instead of frustrated at what God didn't do or frustrated at Sarah for what she might have done or didn't do, I'm just grateful that Sarah's in my life. I'm grateful that God's in my life. I'm grateful as He unfolds what He's doing in things. And I've been doing this enough time that now I'm really not even just a head game trip, but I'm really convinced that God really does know best about everything. And His way of doing it is going to beat mine every day.
Well, it can sound kind of silly when the dog's like, "Oh, my favorite thing." It's like you kind of like, is everything your favorite thing?
Everything.
And it's like, you know what? If you are actually living in the moment and living with a sense of gratitude and appreciation for just the joy of experiencing life, you really can enjoy every moment like that. Like, it is my favorite thing. It's not some goofy, retarded, that person doesn't have a brain approach to life.
Well, the dog sounds pretty retarded.
he does. But
my dogs are that way. They're always excited. You even pull down a leash. We're ready to go.
Think of the joy in being able to recognize where God is in the moments and the simple appreciation of a sunset, of just a chance to be where you're at. When you come across people like that, they are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Boy, aren't they?
That put wind in your sails as opposed to people who are sucking life from your sails.
Absolutely.
And it's like, that being able to approach life like that, that is available to us. It isn't just for the sunshine personalities. It isn't just for the optimist at heart.
Yeah, I want to keep it.
The reality is it's there for me to go, I can live in the acknowledgement that even if I don't discern it clearly right now, God is still present. If I live with that as base zero, that's the foundational truth. Life looks a whole lot different than me interpreting it and wondering, has he abandoned me? It feels totally different. It looks totally different. And the dog seems to be having a blast when the cat's in prison.
Yeah, and that's what I think the wonderful thing about a dog is how excited they are all the time and happy to see you and whatever you give them, they're thrilled with. And I think God really doesn't want us to be dogs necessarily, but I think dogs give us a pretty good example of how it is that we can kind of get back to the simplicity of this thing instead of all the...
I also think that there's something that is rampant in our culture, and that's the whole concept of entitlement, where I think people are sort of figuring, like, who's basically supposed to buy my lunch? How do I go through this with a sense of somebody should be providing for me? And I think a lot of people, they kind of transfer that in their dynamic with God. It's like, I have been a good little boy. I've been a good little girl. God, you kind of owe me. Where are my blessings? And when you come to, like, Christmas and the whole gift-giving dynamic...
And whether you're naughty or nice.
It's so wild to me. It's like we've been at pains to help disengage our children from any kind of thought of entitlement where they, you know, it's like as opposed to going like, well, gee, I'm going to compare and, you know, do I get as a huge haul as my friends in terms of their... It's like, you know what? Being able to come at this with a sense of I'm really genuinely expecting nothing because I don't have a sense of entitlement, then I get to enjoy everything, big or little, that comes my way. What a far more enjoyable way to live life. Yeah. And it is a choice that's available to each and every one of us.
And there is a childlikeness about that. I think that gets to the essence of what it is to be childlike.
Uh-huh.
It's just to appreciate what's going on in the moment. You know, Amy... Our three-year-old granddaughter, she doesn't have a sense of the future and how my life's going to go and what it ought to look like. I mean, she just – last night we did a mall out here that does a – this is Los Angeles. So they do a little snow blowing thing. At 7 o'clock at night, they blow snow over the middle of the mall. It was an outdoor mall. And Julie wanted us to go with Amy and Lindsay, so we went with her. And it was just the wonder. This is just so cool. I'm sitting there going, these are stupid soap suds. It's not even snow.
Yeah, your mom. Oh, my God.
Well, just kind of going. Okay, but you look at Amy, the sheer wonder of the moment and the beauty and just the awe of her looking around at the snow. And you're going, it's not even real snow. But she doesn't know. She hasn't seen much real snow in her little life. But she joys what it was. And she does that every day when she comes over here. And then she has the occasional meltdown, which we've talked about as well. that's the cat side of her personality.
There you go.
This is day 683 of my captivity.
You know, I think the whole religious mindset that focuses more in on the rules and the what I should or shouldn't do, I think you lose the joy of the simplicity of simply approaching God as you would being excited to see a friend. Hmm. You know, when I approach, you know, when I'm happy to see a friend or a friend calls, I don't have any agenda other than the enjoyment of we're talking. And it really doesn't matter about what. I'm not going like judging the, you know, like the topic of the conversation. Well, do I really care or not?
Right.
I'm just happy to be relating to that person. And, you know, I think a lot of people, they struggle with that sense of I want to be able to hear God. And I think it's because perhaps they come at the whole subject with they're trying to get a result. I'm wanting some kind of guarantee. I'm wanting a piece of wisdom for a course of action as opposed to just enjoying a relationship. And because they're wanting to get something that comes out of, quote, hearing God, I think they miss out on the engagement of learning to just relate to him where hearing is not even the focus.
Well, I came up on the forum last week. One of the discussions on the forum was, does God really want to make himself known to everybody? That's not the way it was phrased, but does God really get to everybody, or do just some people get it, and then other people, they just get to walk in their sense of, I'm trying to figure out what a phrase is, doesn't sound pejorative, walk in the sense of isolation and emptiness where God never makes himself known. And I read the discussion, I read part of it, and you and I are really too busy right now to ever crawl in and start commenting much.
What forum?
Yeah, I'm sure you haven't been there in years yourself, but as I looked over it, I really sat back and said, is that really, would I buy into that view, the walk I have with God? Well, Wayne and Brad might get it, and, you know, maybe some other folks might get it.
Because we're really holy and really special, right?
Well, it may not even be that. It may just be that we're just dumb dogs instead of nasty cats.
My favorite thing.
That's my, duh. You know, and or is it just, and I would say if I were in the position of somebody like, man, I don't feel like God's making himself known to me. I feel like I'm all alone. I pray. I see other people talk about this relationship with Jesus. And on one podcast we did a while back, somebody compared it to be like, is it Beaver Cleaver's mother or is it somebody else who never comes home? You know, the aunt that just promises stuff.
Yeah,
the working
alone
mother, I think it was, who never comes home but says, I love you. I'm doing all this for you. What would I do if I were in that position? And I guess what I would say, I wouldn't find comfort in the fact of saying, it doesn't happen for some of us, and I'm one of those. I guess I would be talking.
Now that's despairing.
I think it would be. What I would be doing is, first of all, and I don't mean the whole, because here's the other side of it where I don't want to go, well, it's your fault if you're not having that kind of relationship because you're just not doing it right. I mean, I wouldn't go there either, but here's where I would go. Father, what is it about you I'm missing? Because it's got to be something. And show me what that is. And if that didn't work out in a given period of weeks, I would seek out close friends of mine or somebody that I know does know the Father I want to know. And I'd spend some time with them, and I'd say, is there something I'm missing? Is there something in here? Is there some way that I am sinking into this relationship? Because if my iPod doesn't sync with my iTunes, I'm figuring there's something wrong in the cabling. So there's something wrong in what I'm doing. Without the whole guilt, it's sin in my life, I'm a bad person. I don't mean that.
You're
I
not just
mean,
blaming Apple.
You know, I'm not. I could. I know people who do. I've done everything right in doing. But I would say, what's wrong? And if I need to get tech support, I get tech support. But the point is, I think God wants this connection with us. Most people I know find their way into it. The few people I know closely who don't, with every one of them, I would say, you know, I could see some things I would love to tweak their mind about to see if it would help, but not sure they're open to it.
There's some feline tendencies of some offense and some expectations that are looking at this from a place of confinement.
Often that's true.
You know, and it's like you look at...
Or God speaking to me is going to look like a certain thing. I'm going to hear a voice out of a wall, and I've been in my room forever, and I've never heard a voice out of a wall, which... I haven't either.
So it's not just whether God does it or not, but he won't do it for me. And there's a little bit of that victim sense that sometimes finds its way in, which is really hard to overcome. It's like you have to kind of lay that one down.
I would think, because I have real compassion for people who feel like that, who feel like, I've been looking my whole life, and I just can't find it. One guy suggested, wrote to me an email saying, you know, you and Brad never talk about the fullness of the Holy Spirit, which... is a podcast all its own, and I think we really need to someday, because that could even be one of the things involved. Now, the reason we don't talk about it a lot is because I hate how that terminology has gotten used by the charismatic wing
for
of the family.
For the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah, to wear a merit badge and to make people feel less than. That's why we avoid that language.
But I think the fullness of the Holy Spirit is language that Paul used to talk about how we come alive in recognizing who God is. I'm not saying that's everybody's problem who's not seeing it, but I'm saying that's one of a handful of things. I would kind of, if I was tech support
well, it's
for somebody.
It's one of the essentials for the Christian life. I can't do this under the power of my effort.
Under the power of Brad? You're not big enough to do this?
Nope, can't do it.
Me either.
And happy to acknowledge that. You know, I think one of the other things that's really important is when you look at this whole thing, I don't think this is a perfect analogy at all, but do you spend any time thinking of the fact that gravity exists?
You know I do, and I'm sick. I know most people don't. I know what you want for that answer.
Okay, you do. Well, God bless you. That's wonderful.
The other day, I put something on a counter, and it fell off, and I'm just going, gravity? Yeah, I do.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, really, it's my fault. I didn't put it on the counter right. But
the reality is the reason I want to use it as that analogy is most of us kind of take it for granted. Most of us are aware of it when all of a sudden, like, say you walk close to a cliff. At that moment, I am aware. Gravity. There's a reason I am not walking off this cliff willy-nilly.
Like
because
hanging lights on your second floor?
Yeah,
like
I should have thought about that. I really should have.
Yes, I would think.
The dynamic is there's moments where all of a sudden I become really aware that this is there, but a lot of times I'm not really thinking about it. But my life is blessed because it does work, because I don't just fly off the planet. I mean, whether I've ever thanked God or not that I'm just not flying into outer space, the fact that gravity's there and that I may be completely ignorant or unaware or just I'm ignoring it, the reality is it's there and it's blessing my life. Sometimes things happen, like I set a glass near the edge and gravity doesn't bless me like I thought. You know, it's like, ooh, that didn't work for me. I'm not happy with gravity. Well, if I would jettison gravity, right, well, then I'm off to the moon, you know?
Yeah, and the whole thing about not liking gravity is incredibly self-centered. It's where gravity does not serve me well that I don't like
it. In that one moment. Yeah.
Yes.
And it's not in the fullness of life. It's in that one moment and this one outcome that I get offended at gravity and just go like, I think sometimes people take God's presence like that. They largely are unaware that he is with me. And if I don't start at that base point and just acknowledge, you know what, God isn't absent from this. God didn't leave me. He isn't avoiding me. He's not sent me in the corner to be isolated and punishing me. God is present in everything. And his love for me is constant and pinned to the max. If I approach life and interpreting everything around me, all of my senses were filtered through those two things, I think you might have a little bit of that dog, this is my favorite thing. I think something would change in terms of, as opposed to your days of captivity and your confinement and the enemy out there and the guards and all this other, you'd get this sense that, you know what, maybe I don't see everything and maybe I'm not really tangibly aware of his felt presence. But I'm not going to live with the illusion of being abandoned.
And I think that's good. I do. And I would also just advance a little further to say what you just described about that meter being pegged to the ultimate. I do think God wants us to be aware of that. Not in feeling, like I feel that in some weird way that we serve feelings. But some awareness, that whole visceral Romans 8:15 thing about my heart cries out, Abba. It's not just an intellectual, okay, I know God is my Father.
All.
There is a visceral, and so for people who aren't connected there, whether it's religious mindset, whether it's performance issues, whether it's just never broke through to what fullness in the Holy Spirit might mean in their experience, those are things that I think people say, guys, take a look at, because if there's anything about this Christmas season, that what it seeks to celebrate, whether or not Jesus was born December 25th or not, but the fact that God came as a little kid to live among us as a human so that we would know his love for us, not so we'd have an intellectual, theological agreement, but that we would know this Father is deeply fond of us and wants us to live in that reality. And boy, just don't settle for anything other than that. It may take you 40 years to find your way through that. I don't know. But I think the journey of faith is getting through that into the life of it, not stopping at some point saying, well, I guess it's just not going to be any more real for me. boy, I wouldn't leave any of my friends there. I'd just say, come on, let's try to find a better place, because I think there is one.
You know what's been so fun about this whole Christmas season is my wife loves the whole dynamic of Advent. You know, we're not Lutherans or Episcopalians
or whatever. And everything.
Yeah, but we have our own little Advent thing.
We do
that
a few years.
And every week we sit down, and usually on a Sunday night, and we kind of talk through the whole Christmas story. But we do so in the context of Taylor, who's 6, Jonathan, who's 10, and Jared, who's almost 13, and we personalize it into their context. And we talk through it. It's like, you know, the shepherds, you know, all of a sudden the angels out of nowhere just bursting on the scene. What would you have thought? What would you have felt? What, I mean, we talk through all those dynamics so that the Christmas story is something that does inspire awe, a sense of wonder, like, gosh, of all the ways that God, very God, could show up on the scene, he lands himself in a manger, in a feeding trough. He's a little baby. And you just, I mean, there's just all this fun. We have this little Playmobil set that Taylor sets up as we tell the story. We have so much fun. We laugh. I mean, we let it go wherever it takes in terms of the conversation. But it's moments where you're going like, you know what? God is not a concept to my children. He's not a system of morality that we're seeking to scare them into obeying. He's really a person that they're going like, wow, you know what I mean? He feels things that I feel, and he goes through life the way I've gone through it. So they're being raised, and their hearts are being cultivated with this concept that, guess what? He's with me, and he does know what it's like to be a kid. He does know what it's like to grow up. He does know what it's like to deal with stuff. And they then learn to process life with him present. You know, the whole Emmanuel, God with us. It's who he is. It's one of his names. It's not just a hope.
Yeah, and he didn't leave at the ascension.
No.
Because he said, I'm not going to leave you as orphan. I'm going to come back, and I'm going to live in you this friendship we've had out here.
Somehow that's better.
It, much better. And I just, you know, encourage folks, don't settle. Don't settle for just, it's just going to be an intellectual thing for me. It's not going to be real in my heart. Rather, find a way for God to open a door and just hang out with him and ask him and, you know, talk to some folks you know that might be helpful.
And I think the best way to kind of, you know, embark on this, if it's a foreign concept.
Embark? Is that a dog concept?
Yes, it is. It's a dog concept. is to, you know, if you sat here with the base premise that God's here, as opposed to sitting there with the sense of abandonment and the accusation that, God, you've left me. If you start with the fact that, hey, God, you're invisible. I'm not real good at this. You're here. Help me find you. Hell, you know, it's like, help me see you. Your senses are opened up to a whole realm expecting to see somebody. There's an expectancy, but you're not defined what it is. There's a sense of going like, God, I'm open. I'm looking. I'm engaging as best I know. I don't think I've ever encouraged someone to embark on that. That hasn't ended up somewhere in the course of time settling into an awareness that, you know what, he is here.
Absolutely.
I can look back, and I do see his hand.
You want to hear somebody freshly doing that?
Yeah.
We've been talking the last couple of podcasts about the difference between religious thinking and relational living, and here's somebody who wrote us a letter this week. They sent along an offering just to support stuff for the God Journey, which we greatly appreciated. Here was a little note. I thought this was just – the whole note is just incredibly dog-like in this euphoria. She says, we are so excited to be able to help you in this God Journey stuff. Seriously, I was never so excited about tithing at our club as I am about supporting you guys. It's awesome, and we generally love you guys as an extended family. Now, footnote here. This is from Amy. I actually met Amy about a month or so ago. Her and her husband came to a thing that I did. So we want to continue, too. It's such a gift to us. My husband and I have been growing closer as a couple because of it as well. A wonderful bonus, isn't it? Listen, it goes on. That 1214 podcast, by the way, is exactly where I am at in terms of trying to be aware of my concerns to make people understand where David and I are now. I know that should not be my focus. Living relationally with the Father needs to be. Wow, blows my pea-sized brain every time. If I think too hard, I get confused. And then she says, can I just tell you how the whole journey is changing how I pray? I told my husband the other day, I almost don't even know how to anymore. Like, I need to learn all over again. Makes sense, especially when praying with other people. Still a baby on this journey. And then says, we took my cousin, his girlfriend, out for dinner the other night, and it felt so good just to be with them as people and not feel guilty for talking church. They're not followers of Christ. Just loving on them was so freeing and trusting that God will use us in His way in their lives and resting in the fact that He is bigger than anything we could coerce.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that a great letter?
Yeah, when you sort of drop the agendas, drop the religious obligations, the list of what I should achieve or not achieve in relationship with people, and you simply love them, it is far more enjoyable, far more actually happens in terms of bearing fruit than anything that you're trying to make happen. Because there's the reality of, you know what, someone doesn't feel like you're trying to love on them to achieve something. They actually just feel like they're being loved.
Oh.
And that changes folks.
And that opens doors for real conversation when they're ready.
Yeah.
Rather than
forced conversation.
I'm going to feel guilty when I go home tonight because I didn't get Jesus into the conversation. And if that's, and I have sat through many, many conversations exactly like that with family, with people. I've got to work him into this. And it ruins the whole dinner, first of all, because if you do it, you've ruined them in some way because this wasn't about your love for them. This was about your love for you and not wanting to feel guilty going home. And the other thing is that if you don't get it in, then you've ruined – you just weren't able to relax and be the person God made you to be with the people God's arranged you to be with. And I love the euphoria of we were just with them and we didn't have to work it in. And God can do whatever He wants to do just by our loving people around us.
Yeah.
That's just beautiful stuff. Nicole wrote as well, said, I just wanted to thank you for the encouraging words you used on today's podcast. It really helped me sort through a lot of thoughts concerning the religiosity of the way I was going about connecting with other brothers and sisters. I just need to be. It's not hard. Well, dying to self is. But if I get past that, then just being will become natural and easier.
Like yeah. That. One of the names of David's mighty men, the chief of all the greatest warriors that David had in his band, his name translated from Hebrew means the Israelite who sat down. It's just a bizarre name.
Yep. Did you Google that?
Yeah. Oh, I didn't Google it. I know Hebrew.
There you go.
The reality is
that MDiv.
That's an amazing statement of just being able to kind of sit down. It's a posture of rest. It's a place of security. Because I think that's what God wants us to be. He wants us to be secure in His love. When you see a little kid that's insecure, life is hard.
Yeah.
Life is just hard. Yeah. When they don't know what's coming at them or what's going on or where they find security, man, they are so able to be captured by just about anything.
Yeah. Someone defined meekness one time as nothing to win, nothing to lose, and nothing to defend.
That's good.
It is good. It just allows us to live in the simplicity of who God's making us to be. It starts with Him, living in that towards Him. It fulfills itself in learning to just live that way alongside others, which I think is what this journey is all about.
Yeah, I think when Jesus summarized the whole Old Testament, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, love the neighbor as yourself, it's profound and also simple.
And enough.
And enough. Wow.
Yeah, I wanted to share with you a song. A brother named Todd, who's been listening to the podcast a bit, reading some books, his, wrote a song called Mr. Nobody, and just thought he'd share it with us and allow us to share it on the podcast with you guys. I think it makes some pretty good statements. It really kind of ties together some of the things we're talking about. It's titled Mr. Nobody, which sounds pretty negative. It sounds pretty cat-like, but as you'll see, the song is very dog-like.
I may be a nobody, but I'm somebody special to you. It ain't based on how great I am or anything amazing I do. Great gift has been given me through the Son of your love. I'm amazed at your promises, everything that you've done. For a nobody, nobody like me. Ain't no trophies on my shelf, my mug ain't on the front page. Just a child who heard your call. by grace, a new life given me, or I'll never be the same. There's a love inside my heart, acceptance brought every change to a nobody, nobody like me.
Isn't that good?
That's just great. You could just see a dog with floppy ears playing that.
Yeah, well, I don't know if Dodd appreciate that, but I've been corresponding with it a little bit, and just I think that song comes out of some real transitional thinking and transformation in his heart and life. And so when I listen to it, I kind of see, boy, I've seen God really opening doors and opening wisdom in this brother's life, and that's what this journey is all about. Really.
I mean, you can hear something like that in the guitar picking. I don't know that I don't know his story like you do, but the reality is you can just hear it just in the very picking of there's something there. It had, I don't know, there's something wonderful there. I just sat there going, like, man, yeah, I resonate with that.
It's just playful.
Uh-huh.
It comes back to the dog thing. The dog's playful.
Being simple, being loved.
There's something about, and I what a great way to finish probably our really last podcast of the year in terms of you and I just doing it alone. But what a great way, right, before Christmas here, just get back to, let's just, if our walk in him's become too intense, too much about trying to fix this or fix that, just see if he won't move you to a more playful place with him. Just yeah. Enjoying him, enjoying what he unfolds. Yeah, we're nobody.
Sitting
no,
in the easy chair.
We didn't earn it. We'll never earn it. Our best day, I'm not going to earn one thing from his hand. And yet he, because he's determined to love me, because he made me in his image and he's just nuts about his kids.
He just does.
We get to live in that love.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.